All right, so I've hit the record button. Are you ready?
I have to make it quick because I have to get on a call with the folks in Texas. They have some conference that they want me to come down to talk about interesting electrical outlets that you put into sinks and things. So I'm kind of starting a new trend in the world.
All right, because it's all about you, right?
You know, it's I'm here for the people.
Hey everyone, welcome to Garden Fork Radio. It's me, Eric, and my friends talking about interesting things. I thought of kind of a new tagline. We're making things and making food. And my other big mantra is, if I can do it, you can do it. And today, if Will and I can do it, you can certainly do it. Right, sir?
Absolutely. It's a great day today, so.
Will is in the woods of Wisconsin rebuilding his camp that he just bought, and I am in Brooklyn, New York, and people are honking their horns outside. So a little different here.
We got 32 inches of snow in the last 14 days.
I saw that on your The Weekend Homestead Facebook page there.
It's amazing. Like, whoever's doing the snow dance can stop now, please. We've got enough.
We had some ice. It's been weird. I mean, you know, climate change certainly is a thing. It is a fact, by the way. And they... I pay attention to it because I tap my sugar maples, and we have not had the snowfall that we usually do. And then all of a sudden we get this wackadoo weather. So
I'd say one thing about climate change, and I'm not going to get political or anything like that, but have you noticed that everything is very extreme with the weather? Like, we didn't have any snow at all in 50 degree weather in January. And then all of a sudden we get 32 inches in a shot, and then the temperature plummets. It's like it swings from these gigantic, you know, extremes versus, you know, before it used to just get cold and then you get snow a little at a time and it would build up over the winter and then spring would come and everything would melt off. And like, spring rainfall is not, you know, just a drizzly storm here and there in May. It's, you get deluged with, you know, 6 inches of rain in one day and then it's dry for 2 months.
Yeah. Welcome to the new world. But anyway, let's talk about some other more positive things.
Absolutely.
We talked about this a bit with Aaron, but you, I think, are kind of brilliant in the way you present information on your YouTube channel and your Instagram feed. And why don't you tell the story about the electrical outlet?
Okay, so we are in the process of, to give people a little background, I like to do remodel projects. I like to dive in and do DIY stuff. I get my buddies and friends over and we work on things. And we like to have a little fun. And I had an electrical outlet that broke. It was an almond one, you know, it was just broken. And we had just finished tiling a shower. And I thought, hey, wouldn't it be funny if we made it look like there was an electrical outlet in the shower? So I modified and broke the plastic cover off the front of the outlet. And then I found a white plate because I thought, who puts an almond outlet with a white plate? That really stands out. So that would be kind of funny. So we just super glued it together, put some double-sided tape on the back, and we started putting in funny places around the house and taking pictures. And originally I took a picture with my shower and posted it. And all of a sudden, you know, thousands of people are looking at this photo of, you know, this electrical outlet going, I don't know if that's code or do you have to have a cover on it? And I think we talked about it on a previous podcast. Well, recently I thought I'd up the ante, and in that same bathroom, it's a laundry room bathroom. And so we have a large sink and I put the cover inside of the sink, like literally 6 inches below the lip of the sink, on the side wall of the sink because it was flat, and then took a picture and said, hey, look at our new farm sink. And I didn't really say anything about the outlet or anything like that. I just kind of let it go. And unfortunately, I learned that once you take the toothpaste out of the tube, you can't put it back in the tube. The photo got out into the wild and somehow got on Reddit, and then 50,000 people looked at it there, and then that got shared 25,000 times, and all of a sudden it's on the front page of Reddit. Then that went to, you know, a whole bunch of YouTube groups and Facebook groups and so on. And we figured it out the other day that now that photo has been shared 150,000 times and been viewed over 10 million times.
And how's that worked out for you?
Well, first thing I learned was don't believe everything that's on the internet, because there are a lot of people who believe that that outlet is real. And I actually had to make a response video to slow down the influx of people who were very angry that I put that in there and it was very dangerous. So I had to actually show that it was a plastic cover and popped off the wall just to make sure that everybody was cool with it. But it's pretty interesting to see where it's popping up, and people are just constantly sending me, hey, I saw your photo here, I saw it here, wherever it is. And it's pretty neat, but it doesn't really convert into YouTube views or Instagram views. It just, once it gets away from you, it's gone and it'll never come back, and it'll always be out there now. So that's what I learned.
And some people appropriated it too.
Yeah. So I got a text message from one of my buddies who's a big gamer, and there's a YouTuber, I don't know if people follow YouTube or not, but there's a gentleman named PewDiePie who has 85 million subscribers. He's the biggest YouTuber in the world. And he had a video this week, and my photo showed up in one of his videos. And like, I've got it sent from all my gamer friends. They're like, hey, you were in PewDiePie's video. And I'm like, okay, great. Yeah. What do I get for that? Nothing, you know? So
no, I mean, he showed it as a point of interest. He wasn't using it in the video.
Right.
But he was just like, him and his buddy were like, hey, what do you think of this? Oh, what do you think of that? So that was interesting.
But I will say,
other Twitter people lift it blatantly?
Well, I had a bank in California that's now using it as an advertisement for their bank, and I'm kind of concerned. It's interesting how all of a sudden, you know, if a photo is out on the internet and you don't know where it comes from, using it to send to your buddies for funny and all that kind of stuff, I'm cool with. You know, that's what we're here. Let's poke fun at some of the obvious simple things in the world, and that's what makes everything go. But then on the flip side, all of a sudden I have commercial banks and appraisers and electrical unions and things like that using it for, you know, to sell or to market or to do those types of things. And it's a little different than I'm trying to think of what I'm going to do about that.
Actually, we have a longtime friend of the show, Kevin, KC, we call him. I'm going to read an email from him in a while here, but he watermarks all his pictures of his dogs that he puts on Instagram. And I used to watermark the Garden Fork stuff, and I think I'm going to go back to it. There's some real simple watermarking apps. I use one that I think it was $5. And I mean, don't look for a free one. A free one is probably going to like scam your computer somehow. Just go find a watermarking app. Maybe I can see what mine is called. I can't find it right now.
While you're looking for that, I think the one comment that it would make more than anything is you never know where stuff is going to end up when you put it on the internet. So definitely think about it before you put it out there, because I would have never guessed a funny plastic outlet in a sink would be in front of 10 million eyes in less than 2 weeks.
Surprise. That's our world.
and like somebody said, the toothpaste is out of the tube. You can't put it back. So, you know, whether you're being funny or putting something out there or anything like that on the internet, it's interesting to see where it goes. And actually, the furthest away I've seen it now is someone in Australia had it posted on one of their pages, and they sent me a link saying, hey, by the way, your outlet's here in Australia. We know it's a US one because of the way it looks, but it's still pretty funny.
I made my first video of fixing my microwave oven, and I knew that the microwave oven people that don't like microwave ovens would come out of the woodwork with the comments, and that's fine. It's their opinion, and they're entitled to it. But what I didn't realize is in Europe, they don't use a microwave oven or a stovetop to boil water to make tea or coffee. They have a plug-in kettle. And one of my friends from Germany was like, he goes, I still don't understand Americans and how they boil water. He says, we have 220 volts coming out of the outlet here in the kitchen, and it works just fine. And I'm like, yeah, because you've doubled the voltage, so your kettle's going to womp up right quick, you know?
I'm wondering, did you ever come to a solution on that? I know I don't want to ruin the surprise in the video that it didn't work, but did you ever figure out what it was, or
not yet? I mean, to be true, we're going to talk about this in another episode, but I haven't been feeling real great. I get kind of a winter depression thing, and I move a lot slower. But in the interim, my buddy, one of my best friends who saw that video said, why don't I give you a loaner microwave that I have? And so it's the same model, but it's black. And so they're side by side in my kitchen right now. And I'm still finding myself putting my cup of tea in the microwave that's broken and start hitting the buttons.
Old habits die hard.
So, there's a follow-up. I learned some about testing capacitors and testing the magnetron. That sounds like something from The Simpsons. with a digital voltmeter, digital ohmmeter slash voltmeter that you can get on Amazon or Harbor Freight or whatever. So, actually, Kevin, if you have some thoughts on that, I'd like to hear from you about that. But or Jesse either, another expert friend of ours. But yeah, so there's ongoing, and I think I've figured out what it is. It's a small part, and what's very interesting is if you buy it from GE, it's $65. If you buy the clone on Amazon, it's $7. I won't say what it is, but I was just like, what?
That's pretty amazing. That we talked about this previously too, about when you have to repair your generator, do you buy the original OEM, you know, generator replacement parts for the carburetor, or do you, you know, buy a off-brand one? And I actually bought the off-brand one and put it in on that generator that we talked about on a previous podcast, and it works great. I know that I should have used the original OEM one, but there was a pretty significant price difference, and, you know, overall it still works great. So we're pretty happy with it.
Yeah. And I can't speak for every small engine out there, but there are small engines now that have plastic carburetors installed on them from the store, you know, from the manufacturer. And they have to fight on price. That's their, you know, the retailers are constantly trying, making the manufacturers lower their costs, you know, because that's people, everyone competes against Amazon now. So, I actually bought a clone carburetor for my tiniest chainsaw. It's a little Echo chainsaw, which is inexpensive to start with, and I think the problem is in the carburetor. And I thought, I found this clone carburetor for $20, and I'm like, okay, let's just gamble $20. And it's going to make a good video too. I'm going to drop this carb in, and we're going to make it. I mean, it's all about, hey, let's try this and see what happens. So that's what we're going to do.
So do you want to talk about trying something and having it not work out? I actually recently shot a video, and it's sitting on my editing piece because we're hoping to have the gentleman back out. But have you ever seen those firewood processing units? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
Where they load the logs in, and then it pulls it forward and automatically cuts it to the right length and pushes it out the other side.
It's like a conveyor belt thing.
Yep, yep. My buddy Eric from the YouTube channel Life and Farmland came out, and we were just kind of doing a guy geeky time. And this guy that I know has one of these, and we talked him into bringing it out to the property, and we were going to process a bunch of firewood. And so I got it all stacked and ready. We moved the skid steer and got everything in place, and we ran the first log through it, and there was an issue with the device. We ended up messing around with it for probably about 6 hours out there. Didn't end up shooting any more video, just did a couple of intro pieces and things like that. And then we had to pack everything back up and haul it back out of there. So hopefully when the snow gets cleaned up a little bit, we can take another shot at it. But yeah, we tried to do a firewood processor, and for whatever reason, the oiler that actually oils the chain got plugged somehow at another job, and he didn't know that there was an issue. And then all of a sudden we had it where we were out there in the cold for a number of hours trying to get it to work, with disappointment, unfortunately, in the end.
So did it just seize up, or it just the chain stopped running, or?
No, what happens is there's a safety mechanism on it to make sure that if it's the oiler's not working and pumping oil to the actual chainsaw blade, that it basically stops it. So it'll run for a period of time, and then either the temperature gets to a certain point, or it knows that there's not enough flow or whatever it is, and then a warning light comes on saying, hey, you shouldn't run the unit because there's not enough oil running through the system, as a warning so you don't break it. Because ultimately, if you don't have oil on your chain when you're running your chainsaw, it's very, very hard on the chainsaw. Well, imagine running, you know, 4 truckloads worth of firewood through one of those machines. We could probably get it done in a day, but that's going to be a lot of wear and tear on that. So if the oiler is not working, it would destroy it in a matter of time.
My neighbor up in my house upstate has one. He does lawn maintenance in the summer, and he sells firewood in the winter. And if any of you are contemplating having a house upstate, or you want to heat your house with wood, order your wood in the spring, because up around us, at least, the good firewood guys sell out. They pre-sell, basically. And if you think in the fall, oh, I need to buy some firewood, well, you are toast.
Yeah, that's a big problem here. There's a number of Facebook groups and things like that that I look at all the time, where people are constantly asking, hey, I ran out of firewood. And you know, there's dozens of them every week that come out. And unfortunately, there's only so much that's cut and dry. So you got to get it when you can get it.
Yeah, I helped out a neighbor who it's a older person who was running out of wood. So a buddy of mine asked, hey, can we help this person? I was like, sure, you know, because I have more firewood than I need, because I maybe burn one fire, and it's a decorative fireplace that has a heatilator in it, actually. But and I love to cut firewood, so it's like an excuse to go cut more firewood, you know.
Is that the same? I watched some previous videos that you had, and there was a fireplace that you cooked inside of at one point in time. Is that the same one?
Yeah, it's a brick fireplace, but it has a metal firebox in it, and the firebox has a jacket, so that it's double walled, and then there's these vents at the bottom of that double wall and vents at the top that come through the brick face of the fireplace. And I mean, it's a passive heating system, but it warms up the house pretty good. I mean, there's also a ton of heat loss because it's all going up the chimney, but you feel those vents at the top and there's hot air coming out of them.
Do you guys then have vents in the ceiling that go from the lower level to the upper level? Cause I know in older homes, they used to do that where they cut the hole in the floor and then it was just kind of what do you want to call it? The heat kind of moves right through those.
Just a passive vent. Yeah. They're there as well. They go into the bedroom. So if your friends are there and they go to sleep early, you can't talk about them in the living room. So
nice. Hey, I noticed on the Facebook group that you had posted a new promo commercial for Garden Fork. It's pretty neat.
Yeah, there's on YouTube, you have a channel page. Because at least I do this. If I find a video I'm interested in, I'm like, oh, who's this person all about? You can just below the video is their name and their little icon, their avatar or whatever, like The Weekend Homestead. And if you click on that, it'll take you to their channel page. And if you're on a laptop or a desktop, it doesn't work on my iPad, I know, but it'll take you to a main page of their channel, and it'll show a little trailer video, a little preview video, which ideally is like a minute long or so. And I'm taking a YouTube online class about how to improve your YouTube channel, and it's fantastic. And one of the assignments was to reshoot your trailer for your channel, hitting on what are called value propositions. What are you going to deliver to the viewer and why they should watch? Not what you do, but why they might be interested in what you do. Because everyone says, oh, I make birdhouses, or oh, I build model trains. But your pitch to them is why they should take their valuable time to watch your train building videos or your birdhouse videos, as opposed to the other person that's making birdhouses. So I tried to do that more. I tried to kind of show inside Eric's head a little bit.
So I know you and I have been talking on and off on Monday mornings about just kind of what's going on for our weeks and stuff like that. And you'd been talking about this. What do you think is one of the big key things you've learned from the classes you've taken so far?
You have to have trolls, the haters, because that actually will galvanize your fans even more.
Interesting.
And you can see this working in our current political climate. There are people that love the president and there are people that hate the president. And if the president didn't have the haters, I don't think people would be nearly as loyal to him as they are. It's the same thing happens on YouTube. So I'm actually going to make, like, I was shying away from anything that involved electrical work, but I'm going to fix my microwave, and there's going to be, these guys out there are like, you don't know what you're doing. You shouldn't be touching that device, blah, blah, blah. But then there's going to be people that read that comment and think, no, I think it's okay that Eric did that. And I'm glad that he showed me that. And I'm fine. I used to get really kind of bummed out about the hateful comments. And now I'm like, okay, well, that's just, it just kind of empowers the people, and it empowers me more to go do more stuff. Was that too preachy?
No, I don't think it was too preachy. I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, there's just as many people out there who support all the things positively that we do, and there's people out there, unfortunately, that don't agree with it or get joy in saying bad things to people because they're unhappy with what's going on with them. And, you know, it's just a fact of life that we have to deal with. And, you know, to look beyond that and find the good things out of it and make something good out of it, I think, is kind of the important part.
Yeah. I mean, basically, my life thing is, I don't think you have to be a jerk to succeed. And I think the jerks in the world take up maybe 2 to 5% of our population, but they have a really big megaphone, you know? And so I think the other 98% are great people that like Garden Fork and like the Weekend Homestead. And they're like, oh, wow, oh, Will did this. Oh, Will's got a water leak.
I'm amazed at, I will say this, and I look at what we do at the Weekend Homestead and the YouTube channel and the Instagram and all that stuff. And I'm amazed at how it translates to real people. Like there are, we started this thing, and I think I've told you this story before. I started it because my son and I like to go out in the woods and do that kind of stuff. And we started making some videos, and then we started kind of doing our projects and things like that. And, you know, I'm amazed that thousands of people every week are interested in our humble little life that we're kind of leading and what we're doing. And it's interesting when it translates into people like the friendship that you and I have or with other folks out there, that you can build a community and that there's real people that are willing to support. I mean, I posted the video about the water leak, and I've had probably 3 or 4 people contact me either email or whatever saying, hey, I can come over. I have an excavator. Or, hey, here's a good way to heat up the earth so you can dig it out. And if you want to do it in the wintertime. And, you know, I've even had YouTubers stop at the property that we own because it's a public place and offered it help. They're like, hey, we want to help you clean up. We're going to haul the garbage to the dumpster for you for all this cleanup stuff that we're doing because we're just excited about the project. And it's really humbling to know that there's people out there who care about, you know, what we're doing and want to be positive. So it's, I like the YouTube community, the Facebook community, Instagram stuff that we do just for that reason. Yeah.
Both Will and I, neither of us watch the news anymore because it is just, well, the polite word is a big mess. I have another word for it that I use. But
I like hot mess. It's a big hot mess.
But when you cut out that clutter, that noise, and just kind of focus on the people that are important, I think it makes life all that much better. So, like my buddy Kevin, who I have never met, and he emails me after almost every podcast. Here's a viewer mail from him. We were talking about painkillers for dogs, and he was pain relievers, and he was wondering if I had thought about tramadol. Actually, our pup is on gabapentin and NSAID for arthritis, which I'm blanking on. But we're going to move her, because Aaron from the Impatient Garden suggested this, to Ataquan, which is an injectable product for arthritis that helps their joints. But and we talked about, I emailed with Kevin about the dog sling we have, which is really good. I'll link to it in the show notes here. It's much better than the flimsy ones they have. So I sent him that. And I talked about trying to get my Airport Express Wi-Fi gizmos working. And he said that the utility app on his phone and desktop still allow him to configure it. But he's thinking mine is older. And then I got an email from Jesse, who sent me an Apple script to configure my Airport Express. And that is what I love about Garden Fork. There you
go. That's the best part about all this stuff. I mean, that's why we share this stuff, is because everybody enriches everything. Even the Garden Fork discussion group, you know, somebody will post, hey, I'm doing blank, what do you think? And to get 10 other people's opinions who all want to support whatever you're doing, you know, nobody's in there saying, oh, you shouldn't do this, or that's a horrible idea, or whatever, unless it has to do with a blowtorch and it's my wife. But that's a whole nother thing.
Another email from Mike in New Jersey. Just wanted you to know that while I work in my garage, my Airedales love to cavort in the snow, just like your labs. Really enjoying your YouTube channel, Mike. And he sent some pictures of Airedales are big fox terriers. They are big dogs, and they are a working breed. What do Airedales do? Some Airedale owners are yelling back at the podcast right now.
I might actually have to Google what that is. I don't even know what kind of dog that is.
They look like my neighbors have a fox terrier, so that's a big thing. But yeah, so it's good things. On another podcast, we're going to talk about this, but I am researching my family tree on Ancestry.com. And if anyone knows anything about that, or is a genealogy person, or knows how to use Ancestry, because I'm having some questions about it, please email me, radio@gardenfork.tv. Maybe we could do a podcast about how to find your family tree, because I'm running into some, I wouldn't call them roadblocks, but maybe it's just I don't understand the interface, but it's pretty amazing. My uncle is doing the DNA test. on my dad's side, and my mom's uncle just did the DNA test. So it'd be very interesting to find out stuff. Kind of like that PBS show, Finding Your Roots, you know?
You know, what's very interesting about that is this holiday season, my wife and I got as gifts for ourselves the 23andMe tests.
Uh-huh.
And we've mailed them both in to get the health record information and the genealogy stuff. So we thought it'd be kind of a fun family project to figure out where the two sides of the family come together and all the neat stuff about it. So we mailed them both in, and mine should be back hopefully in the next 3 weeks, and hers just came back the other day.
Neato. I found out through my mother and in confirming on Ancestry that I actually grew up in Wisconsin, but back in the 1800s, we had family members. My great, great, great grandfather was a big deal in Watertown, Wisconsin. He was the mayor for a while. He ran a bar and hotel, and I think a shoe factory. But I'll reveal more. I want to double check. I also have some other information about him, but I don't want to make it public until I double check it, because it's quite a colorful story. So
when you come to visit, I'll have to get some security, because people will be like, oh, that's Eric, and he's related to so-and-so.
Well, I want the parade. I want the parade in Watertown, Wisconsin. So
we'll work on that.
Yeah, you and Aaron, get on that. All right, well, you have a very important phone call to make. So, and people are probably at their destination now.
Yeah, it's been a great day.
I'm going to go. A Japanese grocery store opened up near me in Industry City here in Brooklyn. If you come to New York, come to Brooklyn. Industry City is great. And they have half of it is a Japanese supermarket. The other half is a Japanese pop-up food place with ramen, noodles, onigiri. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Bento boxes, sake, and it's cold out, and I'm going to have a big bowl of ramen and then shoot a video this afternoon, which is about transferring images from your computer onto wood.
Neat. I actually have very interesting. At the resort we own, there's a restaurant, and a bunch of the food vendors are coming tomorrow and Friday to do some samples. So I guess they come in and we cook a bunch of stuff, and I just sit there and eat for 2 days. So I'm pretty excited about that.
I have to run some laps after that.
Exactly.
All right. You can find Will at The Weekend Homestead on Instagram and YouTube. And you can find me at Garden Fork on YouTube. If you want to go to our Facebook discussion group, there'll be a link in the show notes here, or just go to Facebook and type in Facebook discussion group. If you really want to do a deep dive with Garden Fork, you become a patron, a monthly contributor. That's on our Patreon page. I post little updates throughout the month to people that support the show on a regular basis. And there'll be links in our show notes here or patreon.com/gardenfork. Thank you, Will.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Garden Fork Radio's executive producer is Jimmy Gutz of hollowbooks.com. And our music is licensed from uniquetracks.com.